Welcome to another episode of the Home Healthcare News Disrupt podcast. I'm Bob Holly, an executive editor with WTWH Healthcare and HHCN, and I'll be your host for this conversation. For this episode, I'm speaking with Paul Pino, Chief Growth and Analytics Officer at Integrated Home Care Services. Among its services, Integrated helps home-based care providers engage in value-based care, and it often works with smaller providers who struggle to do so by going it alone. During our conversation, Paul and I spoke about value-based care progress in home-based care, along with some of the persistent speed bumps that somewhat detract from that progress. We also hit on the Medicaid access rule, its 80-20 provision, and more. Let's get to it. Paul, it's great to talk again. It's been a little bit.
It's been a while. We look forward to getting together again soon.
Yeah, and I'm excited to have you on Disrupt. I was going to mention this too at the end to try to encourage people to get their tickets to Future Now if they haven't, but I'm excited that we'll be speaking in Nashville come August. Today, we're talking all about value-based care, really, some of the trends and challenges that home-based care providers continue to experience when it comes to value-based care. Before we get into all that, I was thinking, for those who don't know you, who don't know Integrated Home Care Services, could you maybe share a little bit about your journey in home-based care and your role with Integrated?
Oh, absolutely. So I came to home-based care about 20 years ago. I had been a corporate and investment banker. I had started doing deals or transactions within the home care space. And I was introduced to someone within the home care sector, and we decided to go into business together. And so joined that first business in the early 2000s. We grew it. It was a fully capitated home health, home infusion, and DME company contracted with Medicare Advantage and managed Medicaid payers. I would say that I believe we sold that company around 2012. And in 2015, my partners and I came back into the market, and we founded Integrated Home Care Services.
And Integrated Home Care Services, what kind of work does your company today do?
Okay, great. So Integrated Home Care Services is in the home care benefit management business. We coordinate home health, home infusion, DME, LTSS services, and private duty nurses for managed Medicaid plans, Medicare Advantage plans, and commercial plans. We're in about 17 states. We manage a little over 3.2 million lives, plus or minus, and we deliver about 3 million home care units on a monthly basis.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but you own your own provider assets as well, correct?
Well, so our core competency is being delegated for utilization management, network management, claims adjudication, and payment. So in all the states, or in the states outside of Florida and Puerto Rico, that's all done through third parties. Within Florida, I would say that a small portion of our business or our services are directed to entities that we own, but to a much larger degree, though, on the DME side and on the home health side, it's really a small piece of the business, but we do have provider assets. In Puerto Rico, the bulk of our utilization, if not all of our utilization, is provided by wholly owned provider assets.
Gotcha, gotcha. So I mentioned this in my intro, but today we're really focused on value-based care. How does Integrated Home Care Services fit into the value-based care picture? You know, how are you trying to advance this area forward, so to speak?
Right. So it's interesting. When we speak about the topic of value-based care, it appears that everyone has a different opinion on what value-based care is. I would say that back about 20 years ago, value-based care was limited to capitated risk-based agreements, wherein which the value was derived from an alignment in payment methodology from payers. Now, IHCS is a traditionally or a largely capitated vendor, although we have different payment types and different payment arrangements that include other types of value-based oriented revenue streams. So if you think about touch caps, if you think about capitations with reconciliations and other threshold-based payment arrangements, we handle all of those. But what we really find is of significant value is not just a payment arrangement. So from our perspective, every one of our contracts has significant SLAs associated with them. And that includes specifications around quality, specifications around turnaround times and compliance and other metrics that our plan partners, our providers, and more importantly, our patients all appreciate and derive some sort of value from.
Yeah, I totally agree when you say that everybody has their own kind of perception of what it means to deliver value-based care. And I think for some people really fixate on the quality component. Some people really fixate on the cost component. And I think at the end of the day, value-based care is really all of it together, right?
Yeah, I agree 100%. It has to be all of it. You need high quality. You need speed. And you need some sort of financial arrangement that makes sense for all people, right? Because you really want to incentivize the right type of care, not just an abundance of care. And there's additional fee-for-service models, right? There's people that are coming in and just performing services, and they're performing those services so that they can be compensated. But traditionally, there is no tie-in to outcomes and to other performance metrics. So when you think about the way that a managed care plan that has experience or, you know, kind of a deep dive view into value-based care, they're also tying folks that manage the home care benefit to many more value-based oriented criteria.
I'm already going off script, so to speak, because I have so many follow-up questions here. But
it's great.
You know, similar to everybody has their own definition of value-based care, I think a lot of people care about different outcomes and different metrics. You know, I think rehospitalization rate, that's obviously a really big one. I think the rate of missed visits into the home has one that's I've heard it's being talked about more in the context of value-based care. What are some of the biggest, you know, outcomes or the most important outcomes metrics that, you kind of identify?
Right. So there's an old saying that if you've worked with one managed care plan, you've only worked with one managed care plan. I think they all have their specific views around utilization and other parameters that they feel are most important. I would say one of the things that's often missed as we talk about this post-acute care space and the post-acute care continuum that we play a huge role in, we think a lot about diversion, right? So think about pre-acute. Think about the fact that there are patients out there that are suffering from chronic condition sets that require very basic types of medical equipment or other items or some sort of intervention. And so when you have the availability of services and you are not only service agnostic, so we view DME, home health, home infusion, LTSS, and PDN as all part of our service offering. When you view it from that perspective, you're really able to pivot and do what's right for the patient at any point in time. So with a simple, you know, phone call to IHCS, either a care coordinator at a health plan or a physician or other folks, they can just reach out to us and make sure that a patient that doesn't need to present in an emergency room is seen. I think you've seen a lot of activity recently in terms of mandates coming down from CMS, and you've seen the recent view around the managed care rules. Everyone has an opinion. But really, if you think through the in lieu of service, the states have been doing all of this care coordination in lieu of service type business for many years. And so right now, what we find is that the services that we've been performing on the front end to make sure that a patient is seen and seen quickly, we're already working around what we believe is to be the appropriate and most expeditious way of serving a member before they present. As you indicated, though, when you think about readmissions, right, there's this misconception around readmissions. because in many instances, especially if you're looking at Medicare Advantage plans or other traditional fee-for-service, traditional fee-for-service payer, what you'll find is that many of the plans are not necessarily on the hook for the readmission. You'll find that in many cases, the hospital and the methodology of payment under some sort of traditional DRG-like structure, they're on the hook. And so really what we find is that it's not just about readmissions in terms of cost savings and what other folks believe, but it really is about the patient journey around whether or not a readmission is avoidable. And a lot of people just focus on the cost structure there, but really, you know, having a patient represent, having a patient potentially have a hospital-acquired condition that comes into their life, and also what you see in terms of just the dislocation from that patient's home and their family, all those things are high-quality-oriented issues that don't necessarily, in every instance, cost the plan additional money.
From my perspective, somebody who's been reporting on home-based care since 2018, I heard from Medicare-certified home health agencies, whether we're talking about Medicaid, personal care providers, home-based care providers of all shapes and sizes that are really excited about value-based care. They want skin in the game. They don't just want, you know, either upside or downside risk. They're open to, you know, a two-way arrangement. Mm-hmm. And it seems like that excitement is still there. The eagerness for these opportunities is still there, but also it still seems like a lot of folks are having challenges finding those opportunities. Mm-hmm. What would you say some of the biggest challenges today are for home-based care providers when A, just trying to seek out these value-based care opportunities and then maybe even do well in them if they do successfully find one or enter into one of these arrangements?
Sure. That's a great question. And there's an opportunity in there for a commercial for IHCS. So I will unabashedly go through that. Realistically speaking, what we find when we're thinking about smaller providers that want to work with us under a value-based arrangement is a lack of capacity to serve an entire population set. And so when you're thinking about your traditional value-based arrangement, you have someone that says, hey, I'm going to take this book or this geography or this group of patients, and I'm going to perform X, Y, or Z, and the results that I yield will provide X, Y, and Z as well. And so what we find traditionally is that a lack of capacity to serve large swaths of a population can really slow down someone's ability to have some sort of true value-based arrangement. Now, if the value-based arrangement with a plan is focused on a quality-only component, then quite frankly, the issue that they have is getting a network management person to sign a contract that's unique and to come up with an appropriate reimbursement structure for that provider when they have so many other provider network agreements that they have to configure. So it's really understanding whether or not you can make a significant enough dent to garner some sort of unique contract. And if you can, that's wonderful. The other thing that I'd say is that
Paul, sorry to cut you off there, but I had a follow-up question too.
Sure.
Earlier you said, you know, if you work with one managed care plan, you've worked with one managed care plan.
That's correct.
Does it work the other way around too? You know, if I'm that person with the managed care plan, setting up a value-based care arrangement, do I just kind of copy-paste the language from one home-based care provider to another? Or am I really trying to cater it to like what that provider does and what that provider does well?
No, so 9 times out of 10, there's a standard network agreement. And the only thing that changes within the network agreement is specifically around reimbursement.
Gotcha.
And so what you'll find is that, hey, here's our agreement. Here's a provider fee schedule associated with the agreement. Now at IHCS, we have the ability to customize down to the provider level. And we have the ability to set up rules in place and other conditions where a value-based arrangement with a downstream provider is something that we're more than willing to do given the appropriate parameters. For us, one of the most important components of our service offering and the manner in which we contract with payers is the time to staff. If you think about the speed in which one is required to staff in order to be able to adequately discharge a patient in a coordinated fashion so that that patient doesn't represent within the emergency room or any facet of the hospital or inpatient setting, we need to coordinate all lines of business. And so if you think of a home health agency that needs to show up after the infusion medication gets there, that infusion medication needs to get there after the hospital is in the hospital bed or the patient's in the hospital bed. All these functions are things that require coordination. And so when you have an entity like ours that's working with multiple providers to make sure that we're getting the most appropriate provider out there as quickly as possible, these things can change. And so if you think about the way that we work, and this is really, really important, and this is different than other folks that are in the home care benefit management space or with managed care plans, we're not looking for the easiest provider to call. We're looking for the best provider to call. In almost all of our arrangements, when we go live, and in almost all of our utilization, small to regional providers have the bulk of our business. If you think of some of our competitors have a significant amount of exposure and services being provided by large national home care entities and by large national DME companies. When you think about the way that our network participants are assembled, it really is different. We really do focus on the smaller entities. And so from our standpoint, customizing around those smaller entities and making sure that those entities understand the potential volume that they're going to be receiving really makes a significant impact for them in terms of planning. And it also allows us to really plan around the ability to meet our SLAs on discharges.
I think one of the things that I was hoping you could talk about on this podcast was a success story or a case study where a value-based care arrangement worked really, really well in home-based care, whether, you know, we're being super specific or kind of, you know, high level, not using specific names. But could you kind of just walk me through a real world example of a value-based care arrangement in home-based care?
Sure. So there's two ways of viewing it. Is it between the home care benefit manager and the health plan, or is it between the provider and us, or the provider and the health plan?
I think a lot of our listeners probably are on the provider side. So let's maybe start on that end.
Yeah, let's focus on that end, because I think that that's, even in working with us, we've seen some great success stories. We recently went into the market of South Carolina in a very large way. What we recognized before going into that market was that there were significant concentrations of utilization, specifically around home health, that were being directed to entities that may not have necessarily had certain utilization patterns that we wanted to continue. And so what we found was we set up parameters and working relationships and guarantees around quality and staffing and speed to staffing and communication with a core group of network participants that you would consider to be regional to small type of entities. What we've seen is with those arrangements in place and with their reporting, their clinical reporting, we have found that we have right-sized utilization to the point where these entities are always busy now, but they're not busy with turning around the same patient over and over. They're meeting their goals, and then they're receiving additional referrals. So what we've seen with certain entities is the ability not only to come up with a methodology in which they wanted to contract, but also deliver on the promises of, if you need us to staff, we will make someone available to staff as long as we agree that if we continue to perform this way, we will continue to receive the amount of volume that we're receiving. those types of arrangements with these providers, I mean, there's some that we've looked at now that have grown tenfold in terms of volume that they're receiving from this specific plan cohort. And we're really excited for them, and they're really excited about working with us.
Looking ahead, you know, CMS, whether it's on the Medicare or Medicaid side, they've talked about wanting all beneficiaries at some point to be in a type of value-based care arrangement. That's the ultimate vision for at least the current CMS administration. How do you see the future of value-based care in a home-based care context evolving as we look ahead at 2025, 2026, you know, 5 years from now?
That's a great question. So let me start with a little bit about our team. Our team has a significant amount of managed care experience. We have provider expertise. Our home care leads and you know, home health, DME, home infusion, PDN, LTSS, they have over 30 years in certain instances, and certainly over 20 years in most, of provider-oriented experience. Our senior team has a significant amount of managed care experience coming from a diverse background. I've personally had the opportunity to establish and build out a large primary care risk-based MSO and wholly owned center business. And when you think about value-based care, what you need to start with is who is responsible for the dollar value of what's being provided, and then ultimately, who is accountable to make sure that those dollars are adequately allocated. When you think through that component, then you start making assessments around what is it that you're going to be able to do to positively impact those stakeholders by positively impacting all other components of care. In our specific case, we've started working very closely with risk-based entities. So if you think about your global risk-based partners that are out there, you think about CareMax's, ChenMed's, Oak, and other entities that really take full premium risk on underlying patients. And we start speaking to them about how they want us to grow alongside of them. What we have found is that the value-based arrangement and environment that we see evolving is going to be one that that goes outside of your traditional skilled home-based care. At this point in time, we at Integrated provide over 1 million LTSS units on a monthly basis. And so if you think about the impact of personal care, homemaker, attending care, and respite on the life of someone who would otherwise have to be in some sort of institution or some sort of group home facility in order to be able to live, what we find is that we are being pushed more and more to make sure that we're looking at whole person care, that we're looking at what specific things does a member need in order to be able to be home. This includes components of contracting around identifying certain aspects of what's happening within the home, whether it be food insufficiency, whether it be loneliness, whether it be, believe it or not, electricity in many of the instances that we walk into. All those components, I believe, are going to become more and more salient as we see true value unlocked within the home setting. When you think about Medicaid and you think about the fact that managed care plans on average can only contact about 3-5% of the members that are enrolled in their plan, well, we're seeing about 2-3% of the members in that plan. So traditionally, and in many instances, we are the only face that represents the plan that member may ever come across. And so it's a big deal for us to be able to capture everything that we can capture when we have these interactions in order to facilitate not only the benefits that are available to them, but a true understanding of who the patient is in the eyes of the plan.
You mentioned Medicaid, and I think that's a good transition to where I wanted to go next. And bear with me here as I connect the dots a little bit. At the end of April, CMS finalized its Medicaid access rule, which included some pretty major provisions. I think the one that most people are talking about is the 80-20 aspect of that. From, you know, the 20,000-foot view, when we talk about value-based care and providers being able to make progress moving towards value-based care payment, I feel like they're more open to embracing that and taking some risk when they feel stable, right? When there isn't all this other change that they have to navigate through. Would something like the 80-20 rule kind of, I don't know, affect value-based care progress in any way? I know that's kind of a murky question, but any thoughts on that? And then just any thoughts on the Medicaid access rule that came out at the end of April broadly?
Yes. So, you know, a couple of things. I mean, let's take it to a 5,000 foot view, then go back to 30 and maybe come back to 5,000. I think it's important. It was really concerning when we read that CMS wasn't going to consider value-based oriented agreements within the context of what this looked like, because it already starts to kind of split what they would ultimately want as a behavior with what it is that they're actually looking to accomplish. I think that what they're looking to accomplish is an increase in wages for the underlying caregiver. I think that's admirable. I think that caregivers in general are not paid enough, especially given their potential impact and their interaction with patients. If you've ever been to a home-based visit or a home-based delivery of services by a medical equipment technician, the manner in which they treat these members with dignity, respect, and care, and in many instances, the manner in which they're the only person that a patient's going to interact with, we find to be admirable. And so making sure that folks are compensated correctly, you know, we definitely think that that's admirable. What's going to happen, though, is people are going to pivot and agencies are going to pivot, and they're going to begin demanding higher reimbursement in order to be able to cover the component that they need in order to continue to operate. And if they're not able to operate efficiently or effectively, you're potentially going to see an additional consolidation of entities, and then you're going to see a rebasing ultimately of what the ultimate cost structure looks like, because those caregivers, when they can't work for a small entity, they have to work somewhere, and they'll wind up working for a large entity. And when you have too many large entities, then what you'll find is that the market starts to move in terms of price points. So I think what we need to be prepared for is that there's going to be some Medicaid-oriented increases in LTSS payments if the rule remains in place once it's supposed to be implemented. And so from our standpoint, we see that this may serve to inflate price points, especially in certain states throughout the nation that have not necessarily kept up with inflation. And so that's a big piece of what we see. In terms of the potential for value-based arrangements, I think that the right type of value-based arrangement may work very well for someone that's going into some sort of 80-20 or other financial view that's different than their traditional view. I think there's structures here for folks to be able to, as I indicated in the story that I mentioned earlier about a provider whose appropriate behaviors now have increased volumes and therefore improved their profitability, We think that also entering into certain value-based arrangements for some of these folks may also improve their overall profitability if they're structured correctly, because they'll be able to, you know, leverage their internal infrastructure by having a bit more volume. And so we do see that. I think, again, that if you think about the HCBS services or the LTSS services that, you know, the way that we typically refer to them as, they're just critical. So ultimately, if you're a Medicaid state and you're paying up to have these services provided within the home setting, rather than have to reimburse for institutional-based care, I think you're happy potentially seeing some increases. But for us, it still remains a little murky. Now, the other thing that's really important about the rule, given our provider makeup, as I indicated earlier, many of our providers are smaller. Our provider makeup may have certain exemptions in place and may have different percentage rules because they're not all the large national LTSS-oriented entities or the large regional entities. I would say that of the 1.1 million units we provided last month in the LTSS side, I would say that 95% were provided by entities that would certainly fall under the small business component of what the rule will ultimately establish alongside the state agencies.
Awesome. Well, thank you for all that perspective, Paul. I'm looking at my clock here and it looks like we are about out of time coming up on that 30-minute mark. Before we wrap up, we covered a lot of ground. Is there anything else that you'd like to leave our listeners with as we look ahead at the rest of 2024? I know I'm excited to pick your brain a little bit further when I see you in Nashville in August at our future conference.
No, I think that, yes, there's uncertainty. Yes, there are things that are happening within the home care environment that are tricky. I believe that working with entities such as ours, especially if you're in that middle market to smaller market provider range, I think that there's a lot of opportunity to be creative. And so I would say that, you know, we would love to get to know as many providers as possible. Our provider relations team, and we'll share that information, is always looking for ideas and unique contracting methodologies. And so don't limit yourself to just working with large managed care plans or direct fee-for-service contracting. Let's get together and let's figure out exactly how we can take your strengths and place them within contract management and network management infrastructure that truly puts our providers and patients first.
Paul, thank you so much for your time, and thank you everybody out there for listening to this episode of Disrupt. I'm Bob Holly, Executive Editor with Home Healthcare News, a WTWH healthcare company.